Welcome to Land Academy. This is the Cash Flow from Land Show, where we show you how to buy unwanted vacant land and sell it for more on the internet. I'm Steve Butella.
I'm Jill DeWitt.
We are your hosts. With over 15,000 completed transactions, we are the experts in this niche land flipping business.
We hold a drawing to win a free property every month. Enter to win by reviewing this show on iTunes and downloading our free ebook at landacademy.com. All right, let's get this show started.
In the world of real estate investment, Jason Hartman needs no introduction. But just in case, Jason Hartman has been involved in several thousand real estate transactions and has owned income properties in 11 states and 17 cities. His company, Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., helps people achieve the American dream of financial freedom by purchasing income property in prudent markets nationwide. Jason's complete solution for real estate investors is a comprehensive system providing real estate investors with education, research, resources, and technology to deal with all the areas of their income property investment needs. Thanks so much for joining us, Jason. It's an honor to have you. You know, for those of you in real estate who live under a rock, Jason Hartman is kind of the institutional investor, at least in the podcasting world, I guess, I saw.
So thanks. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me. And institutional investor, that's funny. Maybe I should be institutionalized. I don't know, some days. So no, Jason, I'm kidding. I love real estate. It's the best thing ever, at least since sliced bread.
So continue my attempt at your intro and kind of fill our listeners in about who you are in the industry.
Yeah, sure. So basically, I started my career being interested in real estate investing. I was only 16 years old. I went to my first real estate seminar at age 18, got my real estate license my first year of college at age 19, and then purchased my first income property in Huntington Beach, California at age 20. And since then, I have just fallen in love with real estate investing. I spent many years in the traditional real estate business. I worked for REMAX. I was a very successful real estate agent, traditional real estate agent there. And then I purchased a real estate company and years later sold it to Coldwell Banker. And then about a year before that deal closed, which was actually 10 years ago, just about now, actually 10 years ago today, wow, didn't even realize that until
wow.
I looked at the date.
That's cool.
Today, 10 years ago, that deal closed. And many would say my timing was perfect. I think I was more lucky than good. But and then I started about a year before the deal closed with Coldwell Banker, I started this real estate investment business where I became very interested in nationwide real estate investing and approaching the most historically proven asset class in the world, income property, from a nationwide perspective, from the perspective of the way a financial planner would do that, a financial advisor, a financial services firm. So, you know, it's always struck me as odd, Steve and Jill, that, you know, we've got these companies like Merrill Lynch and Ameriprise and all of the other the firms that peddle the Wall Street garbage. We've got all of them out there, and they have such a mediocre to lousy product, frankly. Yet they have a very good sales force and a very good system of selling their product. And you look at real estate, which is the most historically proven product. It's the best product out there for investment and wealth creation. And it isn't sold very well. It's a very fragmented, inefficient market. A bunch of people doing things in their little local area, you know, there's just a lot of things wrong with it. So I created, my business to solve that problem.
That's a great description. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of similarities between the two of us. I started my company in the late 90s, the form that it has now. And I looked at it for some of the very similar reasons. It's a rock solid asset to invest in. And, it throws off an asset-based, it's an asset-based return. So we've always looked at the product that we sell kind of like an investment vehicle and not so much looked at the actual real estate itself. And it's treated us really well.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. You know, it's amazing to me and unfortunate that so many people just take the easy way out when it comes to their investments. You know, they want to just walk in to, you know, one of these Merrill Lynch type firms and, you know, hand over all their hard-earned money. And, you know, they almost never do well with that plan.
Yeah.
You know, the financial services industry does a great job of separating people from their money.
It's true.
It absolutely does.
So what made you see the light? What do you think, what makes you so successful or different in this industry?
Well, I just think that it's, you know, you've got to approach it from an investment perspective. And so I have something that I call the 10 commandments of successful investing. And they basically boil down to, you know, several ideas, but I'll, you know, I'll share a few of them with you. I don't want to sit here and bore you with all 10. You know, I'd say the first one that I'll share is commandment number 3. And that's one that's been very popular. It's really resonated with my audience and many, many people on my podcast. And it is, thou shalt maintain control. So what we do is we help people, as do you, become direct investors so that they actually own and control the asset in which their money is placed. You know, when you compare it to Wall Street or even any other pooled type investment class, you always, when you relinquish control of your money, you leave yourself susceptible to 3 major problems. The first problem is you might be investing with a crook. The second problem is you might be investing with an idiot. And the third problem, assuming you overcome the first 2 hurdles, they're honest and competent, is they take a huge management fee off the top for managing the deal. Right. And, you know, we say, be a direct investor so that you have control over your investment. You decide what to buy, where to buy, when to buy, you know, how to finance and structure the deal, who to rent it to, when to sell it, if you want to do a 1031 exchange, if you want to refinance, if you want to pull cash out, leave it in. You know, it's all up to you. But the thing that comes with that control is it does create a little more responsibility. And yeah, I just thought if I could create a business that helps people alleviate some of that responsibility, that's what I was looking for as a customer myself. When I sold my traditional real estate company in Irvine, California to Coldwell Banker 10 years ago today, you know, I had a big check and I had to invest and deploy that money. And my history before that was I was always a local market investor, the way the vast majority of people approach real estate investing even now. You know, I invested in the Southern California market, you know, Irvine, Newport Beach, things like this. And those properties are very expensive. They don't make any sense at all. They're pure speculation, frankly. They certainly don't cash flow. And, you know, they also are very subject to the roller coaster ride of returns where they have these peaks and valleys. And I just didn't want to go through that again. I was becoming more conservative with my money as I was a little older and, you know, just didn't want to have to earn it again and lose it, you know.
Yeah.
And so I like these linear markets. And so commandment number 5, that's a good time to weave number 5 in. We're skipping number 4 here. Commandment number 5 is thou shalt not gamble. One of my rules is the property must make sense the day you buy it or you don't buy it. And make sense means that it has cash flow. Okay, it's mm-hmm. got to cash flow from day one.
That's right.
So that nothing extraordinary, i.e. appreciation, should have to occur to make a nice return on your money. You should be able to make anywhere from 9 to 13% cash on cash return just from cash flow. Now, in all my years, over 20 years in the business, I've never met anybody, And, you know, I'd love it if you guys want to chime in here, and maybe you've met them, but I sure haven't, who can reliably predict market cycles with appreciation and depreciation. And I said reliably. Lots of people make predictions. I'm just saying they don't come true. Okay.
Right.
But you know, cash flow is very reliable. I mean, the tenant in the property, and by golly, most of the time, you know, occasionally they don't, but it's pretty reliable. Okay. So
I was an investment banker before I started this company. I actually started the company while I was an investment banker, and I was actually really good at it, and made a really good living. And I got out of it for a lot of the reasons that you're saying, and the biggest one being control. You know, I was on the phone all day talking to private equity funds to see if they wanted to buy or sell some of their companies. And there was absolutely no control from, you know, we had no control over anything. And that always, you know, that never really sat well with me. And buying and selling land for cash where you're not involved with anybody except you and the seller, you know, it's just, it streamlines the whole process so well. So yeah. I really identify with what you're saying. And our returns are really good like that too. We're in the solid double digit returns, cash flow, cash on cash returns on every deal we do, or we don't do it.
Yeah, no, it's got to make sense the day you buy it or you don't buy it, you know? So that's commandment number five. A couple more of them. I'll just touch on a couple more of these commandments. I actually have 20 now because I had 10 for years. And then I started noticing, how arrogant. Just make more,
I'd
10
love
more
to
commandments.
See this list.
I heard that Moses dropped one of those clay tablets that was coming down from that mountain, right?
There were
actually 10 more commandments. We just never got. Okay. In fact, oddly, there's a YouTube video on that because I think Monty Python did a little comment.
True.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Don't eat spinach, I think, was one of them.
Oh, there you go. And so just a couple more here that I think are good rules to live by as an investor. Now, your type of investing, although we share many of the same philosophies, your type of investing in land differs from mine quite a bit, yet interestingly, we share some of the same philosophies, so it's kind of interesting. But another one of them is thou shalt diversify, and it goes along with the commandment that immediately follows it, is thou shalt be area agnostic. So let's just blend those two together for a moment. In the United States, now on my podcast, The Creating Wealth Show, I have listeners from 164 countries. One of my goals is to have listeners in more countries than the U.S. Empire, which, by the way, I think this is ridiculous and I'm completely not in favor of it, has military bases in other countries. And I think it's 172, according to Ron Paul. Okay, so suffice it to say, a global audience. But they buy U.S. real estate. And the American real estate market is a pretty special market in many ways, okay? And I'm happy to talk about that if you'd like to.
Yeah,
but
I have a lot to say about that, too. I'd love to hear your
opinion. Yeah, let's talk about that. And let me just, I'll make this point and we'll talk about that. So here's what bugs the heck out of me is, you know, I'll turn on CNBC, you know, the mouthpiece for the vast Wall Street conspiracy, okay?
Yep. That's right.
I call Wall Street the modern version of organized crime, okay?
Yeah.
And I'll turn on CNBC, and I'll see some talking head there, and he's talking about the, quote, housing market, unquote, or the real estate market.
Cracks me up.
And I can never figure out if that guy's talking about Miami, LA, New York, Seattle, Memphis, Atlanta, or Charlotte, or Indianapolis. I never can tell.
I've been saying the same thing for years. Exactly.
It's ridiculous.
It is.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. In a country as large and diverse as the United States, there is no such thing as a national housing market.
That's right.
There are really about 400 local markets, and they all act quite well. Not all of them; some act in lockstep. But there's a variety of them. I divide them into three categories, which is probably the next thing I should mention. They act differently, these markets. Okay, so the old saying in real estate is that all real estate is local.
You can edit. Somebody's agreeing with you.
Okay. Hopefully I've quieted the dog. Okay. So all real estate is local. There are only local real estate markets. And what we say is that you should take the most historically proven asset class, but diversify geographically. You should be in 3 to 5 different markets, which means 3 to 5 different metro areas, not more than 5, because then you're overly diversified. And I myself made that mistake. You know, I can't remember if you read it in my bio, but many people do, saying that I've owned properties in 11 states and 17 cities. Huge mistake on my, well, not a huge mistake, but a mistake on my part nonetheless, because it's just too hard to keep track of that much, okay? So 3 to 5 will do the job, okay? And so then let's talk about the 3 major classifications of markets. We've got these 400 different markets around the U.S., these almost 400 different MSAs or metropolitan statistical areas. And then we take and let's chunk them into the type of market they are. Okay? So one type is the cyclical market. And these are the markets that you always hear about on the news. They're the high markets. They're the markets in California, South Florida, the expensive northeastern markets, right? Make sense?
Right.
Cyclical. Prices go up and they have glorious highs and they have really ugly lows. They are the true roller coaster ride. And the opposite of those, the markets I like now, since I've become a more conservative investor, are the linear markets. These markets, they don't make the news too much because they're pretty boring. They just kind of chug along and do their thing. You know, they're markets like Indianapolis and Memphis and they were markets like Atlanta, but I'm going to differentiate Atlanta and Phoenix in a moment. And these markets, they're boring, but they have great cash flow characteristics. And you can buy properties there. And, you know, over the years, you'll probably get a historical appreciation rate of somewhere between 4 and 6%. Okay? Nothing to write home about right. In terms of appreciation. But still a good hedge against inflation. And if you use some of the other techniques I'll be happy to talk to you about, they can do very well for you. So then there's a third type of market. You with me so far on those two?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. You think the listeners are? I know you guys know this problem.
We'll find out in the podcast stats in a couple of days.
Oh, yeah. But this Jason Hartman guy, what was he talking
He's
about?
He's 175 countries, and we maybe have 17 listeners. Just kidding, Andrew.
Well, that's okay. You know, I'm joking. I only have 17 listeners, too.
Thank you.
Yeah. But so in the third type of market, it's just a blend of the two. It's what we call a hybrid market. And examples of a hybrid market. So we've got the high flyers, the cyclicals. Those are pretty much all of California, all of the Socialist Republic of California. Had to throw that in. All of the Socialist Republic of New York and South Florida, these expensive markets, Boston, you know, those are cyclical markets. Very expensive. They don't make sense. Linear markets, we've got Memphis, we got Indianapolis, we've got, to some extent, Dallas, Houston. Houston is. Dallas to a lesser extent. A bunch of others, okay? Mm-hmm. And then we've got the hybrids. And I'm going to pick two to mention as the hybrid markets today. They would be Phoenix and Seattle, or not, sorry, not Seattle, Phoenix and, Atlanta, thank you. I said Seattle, I had it on my brain. So Phoenix and Atlanta. Now, what is the characteristic of a hybrid market? Well, it's a market during most times, it just kind of chugs along and does its thing, like the linear markets, but it gets drunk at parties. Okay, it has this, you know, it has a couple of drinks and then it just has too many. And what that means is that during the high-flying market, it goes crazy. And Phoenix did this more than any other market in the country probably ever in 2004-2005 era, where we saw appreciation rates that were 49 to 55% in a year.
Right.
I mean, that was insanity. It was obviously unsustainable. Anybody that sees things like that should know that it is a bubble and a disaster waiting to happen. Atlanta is becoming a bit hybrid-y too, because it's always been a pretty linear market. But, you know, you look at like the last year or so in Atlanta, and it's done more than 10%, which is really good and could probably not be considered linear at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So thoughts on the three types.
So what? How do you ensure, or what's your mechanism for acquisitions, bringing it back down to maybe the more, you know, closer to home for our investing population or listening audience?
Can you elaborate on that question?
Yeah. How do you ensure your acquisition pipeline? Do you send out letters? Do you have a network of people that you use to transactions?
So, yeah. Well, remember, my business and my investments come out of my own business. Okay. I'm my own customer. Okay. So my business is, what we do is we basically teach, we do three major things. We teach people how to invest. We provide properties through our referral network, and then we provide support and software, ongoing support to the clients once they buy properties. So basically, we set up deals with providers that we call local market specialists, and they're essentially our manufacturers, okay? And they acquire properties by sending out letters and those stupid little yellow postcards that we've all seen. Okay. You know, do you want to sell your property? And they, you know, work the short sales. They go to foreclosure auctions. They even occasionally buy some properties right off the good old MLS. Okay. The multiple listing service.
Right.
And so they have a whole bunch of different acquisition plans, and they acquire properties. They rehab them. They make them rent ready and turnkey. So our clients can buy them as remote control investors. Our clients never lift a hammer. They're not do-it-yourselfers. You know, they're professionals that either have you know, successful careers, or they're successful entrepreneurs, and they just want to get a good return on their money.
Right, they're the money guys.
Yeah, they're I'm not saying they're all like big money guys. I mean, we do have some very wealthy clients and some famous musicians and actors and so forth. But, you know, most of our clients are just middle class people, you know, that want to buy 6-10 properties, you know, and retire.
Right.
And you know, we help them all. And that's what we do. We help them build nationwide portfolios based on their time horizon, their risk tolerance, their investment goals. And we act like a financial planner would on Wall Street. We just do it with a much better asset class.
Yeah, it's eerie how similar some of the things that we do, not all of them, but our organization is very similar.
Yeah. So when you were an investment banker, were you a Wall Street type investment banker? Were you doing small to medium sized companies, or what do you mean by that?
It was all centered around mergers and acquisitions. I cut my teeth in the beginning of my career as a vice president ultimately an owner of a long-term care company. So we were purchasing nursing homes and things like that. Oh, and then went
that's,
to...
That's a great market.
Yeah, it sure
wonder
is.
You have an interest in real estate. I just did a show on, you know, investing in an assisted living center. So
Yeah, same thing though. I mean, someone else isn't managing it. We were the actual managers. But ultimately, I mean, it started with long-term care and then ended with selling any type of company to private equity groups. And while it makes a lot of sense in for private equity groups, there's just not a lot of control. So I was actually I was a partner at KPMG for a couple of years too, doing the same thing.
Yeah. It's that commandment number three, right? Thou shalt maintain control. And you probably saw, Stephen, firsthand how, you know, people, there's all these hands in the cookie jar, you know? I'll give you an example on my commandment number three. You know, to remember, you might be investing with a crook, you might be investing with an idiot, and assuming they're honest and competent, they take a huge management fee off the top for managing the deal. We all have heard of the Playboy billionaire Larry Ellison, the founder and CEO of Oracle, right? So according to a great book I read about 10 years ago, Lou Dobbs' War on the Middle Class, excellent book. In chapter 2, he talks about the abuses that go on in Wall Street and in the stock market. And these are completely legal, by the way. This is you know, there's nothing illegal about this. From 2000 to 2002, in a mere 2 years, Larry Ellison's personal take from Oracle, from that company, I mean, you sitting down, you ready for this, listeners?
Yes.
It was a whopping $781 million.
Did he start that company from the ground up?
I think he did. I think he's the founder. Yeah. Yeah. So it was probably a startup, right? So $781 million, almost $1 billion in 2 years. Now, listen, I am a capitalist. If I love successful people, okay, I'm all for it. If he can make almost $1 billion in 2 years, it's fine with me. Right. But here is the but, okay? Here's the problem. His interests and results were totally out of alignment with the people who put their hard-earned money into his company. Because during the same two-year period that good old Larry Ellison took almost $1 billion out of that company, his shareholders lost 61% of their investment. At the same time, this is the same period. So the shareholders put their money into his company. They lose 61% of their investment. And he takes out almost $1 billion in two years. That is absurd. And it's totally legal. You know, it's just that the interests of the people at the top are so out of alignment with the shareholders. Why would you put your money into something like that? Buy something you can own and control. You know, when I do my seminars, I always ask, and I've had thousands of people come through my seminars over the years. I just spoke to my second largest audience ever last Sunday in Las Vegas, 2,000 people in the audience. And, you know, I'm always asking this one question. I always say, how many of you, you know, by show of hands, how many of you know someone who has started with, and oh, they have to make, admittedly, their own determination as to what this means, right? Okay, but it's a subjective question a little bit. How many of you know someone who started with very little and made a lot of money, created a lot of wealth in real estate? Almost every hand in the room goes up because we all know people who've done that.
Right.
Right? We all know that. We can see real live examples of real people that we can actually meet and talk to. Maybe someone we're married to or, you know, a child of or a parent of or, you know, related to a cousin of.
Examples of that.
Exactly.
We're real people.
Right.
And then my full-on question is, how many of you, after almost every hand in the room is up, put your hands down, how many of you know someone who started with very little money and created a lot of wealth in the stock market? And almost never does a hand go up. Occasionally, there's either a heckler or someone who has a story like this. You know, someone will be a heckler and say, well, Jason, what about Warren Buffett? Right. And I'll say, well, guess what, folks? Warren Buffett is an insider.
Right.
Okay. And Warren Buffett is a guy who runs businesses.
Right.
Okay. He is not an investor per se, even though people call him an investor. Okay. Yes. He's an insider. He has privileges and access that you do not have.
Right.
And then there'll be one person who will be sincere and say, well, you know, my friend started this company and then they did an IPO and took it public. Well, that's an insider too. Okay. Yes. Great for your friend, but you know, that's not investing.
That's right.
Running a business.
That's okay. Right. Yeah. Well, that leads me to my last question. I mean, for somebody starting out in the business that you and I are in, what would you think the first step is?
You know, one of my favorite quotes is a Zen quote, and it goes like this. It says, "To know and not to do is to not yet know. To know and not to do is to not yet know." And what that means to me is that the knowing, in quotes, the knowing comes from doing. Life is about on-the-job training. You know, and I've done it myself at various points in my life. I certainly know a lot of people who do this because I have groupies that come to all my seminars, listen to all my podcasts, and they've been listening for years and some of them still haven't done a thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you gotta get in the game. And you have to have faith that you're going to get in and you're not going to know everything before you get in. You must get in and actually do it. And then you will bring a new you to that party, because when your money is at stake and you've actually invested, you're gonna be a much more attentive, aware person. And you're going to be on your A game. It just comes with the territory. And so, you know, don't be this lifelong student. Don't be the person who has the paralysis of analysis. I mean, I love learning. It is my passion. I love to learn things and study things. If I could do that all day, I mean, like, if I could just read and study and listen to podcasts all day and then, you know, record podcasts and teach them to other people, that's what I would do. Okay. And I guess I could do that. I mean, I'm financially independent a long time ago, but you know, like,
I've tried to retire 3 times, by the way, and it lasts 2 weeks.
Retirement sucks. It's okay. Who wants to retire? Nobody. I have no interest in that. You know, people that retire die really early because they have a purpose. Okay? You got to have a purpose. And so you got to get in the game and do things. You know, don't suffer from the paralysis of analysis. Don't be the education junkie. Don't be the seminar junkie. Of course, some degree of education is important and needed, but the best education you'll ever get in your life is actually doing something. And I mean, there's lots of examples of that, certainly. You know, you get the idea.
Jason, that's great advice, and I we're kind of out of time here. I so appreciate you joining us. It's such a treat.
Can I ask one last question, please?
Yeah.
Jason, what is your view right now? Because I have an image in my head, because I know where you are, what you're looking at. Is it just as fantastic as I think it is?
Oh, and I'm in La Jolla, California.
I know you are.
So my view right now is looking at Stephen Batala on my computer. Okay. If I turn my head, I see palm tree and I see the ocean and I see the sun shining on the ocean here in La Jolla, California. So that's my view.
Thank you.
But let me tell you, for my 4 years living in Phoenix, there is no place on earth that has better sunsets than Arizona.
Thank you. I agree.
I do too.
We were in Hawaii, a couple years ago, and I don't think Hawaii's can't hold a candle to Phoenix's sunsets for some reason.
Phoenix has the best sunsets anywhere, ever. Yeah. I mean, I got to tell you, I miss Phoenix. I had to move to the Socialist Republic of California. I had to move back for a tax write-off of all things. I'm the weirdest. I'm the only one ever that probably ever had to do that. And I talked to my CPA yesterday, and my sentence is up 6 months and 1 day. And then I can move anywhere. So, you know, I took advantage of my tax break, and then I'm free to move again. So
that's awesome.
We'll see where I go next.
Thank you so much once again, Jason. Where can we find you on the internet?
JasonHartman.com, just my name, JasonHartman.com. And of course, in the iTunes store, I run a whole podcast network. I have about 20 different podcast shows on a variety of topics, from investing, wealth creation, monetary policy, economics. And my hot new show is the Longevity and Biohacking Show. So plan to live a long time and invest for that long life you're going to have. And you can find me on the iTunes store, Stitcher Radio, any podcast platform. Just type Jason Hartman and you'll find me.
Awesome. Great.
Thanks again so much.
Hey, thank you, and happy investing to you and your listeners.
I'm a little in awe because he's got so many shows. I'm thinking we do one show 7 days a week, and with all of our other things that we're doing, I have no idea how he keeps up with that. He has a lot going on, but it's good. So, it's interesting. Okay.
I would love to hear your take on this, yes.
Well, we all have the same philosophy. It's really interesting. Some of the things that he said, you know, sung to me, that's what we preach too, which is, you know, having a plan. And I agree with his thing about the real estate industry and not a real clear system. You know, you and I have sat through real estate school. And I remember sitting there, and I know everybody around me in the room was like, okay, now this is all great, but what do I do? What do I do? Right. They don't know. They don't teach anything. They're only teaching you go to real estate school. They're teaching you how to close a deal and all the legalities of it, at least here in Arizona. But there's no sales. There's no customer service. There's no, you know, they not even really talking about finding your broker. You know, they kind of talk a little bit about you need to get one, go figure it out. And then they leave it up to the broker to kind of teach you. But I even question, you know, how much time they really have to really hold your hand and guide you. So I know that's one of the reasons why we are successful and our people are successful is because we have taken it down to that level and help everybody with a plan.
That's right.
So,
well, as an owner, you know, without financing. So there's just,
in a system and a day one, and here's how you get started, and let's all be smart about it, and let's not get crazy. Don't quit your day job yet.
Right.
You know, all the things. He has his 10 commandments, and we have, or no, 20 commandments, excuse me. 20, was it going to be 30? So
thou shalt not have your dog bark during your podcast. .com.
That was so cute. I love the doorbell rings and the dog goes crazy. That was good, though. That's good because he's doing it wherever he wants to be. That's what we do. No one knows where we are right now either.
That's right.
But anyway, I'm just teasing.
We're in a tiny little office in Scottsdale.
We are with a green screen behind us. It's really funny.
Taking all the glamour out of it.
I love it. Well, and what I also thought was interesting is that where we fit in is our niche, I think, appeals to everyone. I mean, we have some members and people that we work with that don't have a lot of money to start out. I mean, they're just getting started in this, and they don't need a lot of money, and all the way up to, you know, some of the consulting things.
Yeah.
I almost got the impression that some of his people are, he's kind of past that, that he's dealing with just the bigger. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think he's made real estate a passive investment vehicle for people who have absolutely no time or desire to learn anything. They just want to simply buy a house or a portion of a house. This is what he does. They buy a house or a portion of a house, and it's already rented out.
Mm-hmm.
And I would bet, I don't know, we didn't talk about it at all for a lot of reasons, but, you know, it's probably not financed, or let's say it's really, the leverage is really low. So let's say you just 50% of it's financed and 50% of it's equity.
Right.
And they collect the check and somebody manages it. So it's making a real estate investment a passive income thing. It's like, it would be, the people who are involved in this are, it's as easy for them to do that as it is to go buy a share of Apple stock.
I was just thinking that. Do I want to go see my, you know, Edward Jones person, or do I want to call Jason today? I need to throw $100,000 at something.
That's right.
That's going to yield X. So, right.
So, you know, while we're in the same business from a return standpoint, our system is, you know, you need to do 10 or 20 good deals the way that we do it, and that's it.
Well, and I like it with our system is that you hold the asset. You're in charge. You're not going to anyone. No one's getting a fee off you. Mm-hmm. You know, like he just talked about his things. So we're just really helping people be their own whatever.
Why do you think he has so many podcasts that are off topic from real estate? That's my real question.
Yeah.
Do you think it is like his back? Do you think that he is going through the back door getting investors and just kind of talking about stuff and informing people about different markets? And or do you think he wants to be Tim Robbins?
I think he's got a secret desire to be that other guy. The one that you pointed out to me on TV the other day. Do you know what I'm talking about?
What?
The, Joel. Just kidding.
Joel, no.
I'm joking. I'm just teasing. I don't know, but I think it's cool. So
I guess whatever it is, it works. You know, he's got a lot of deals going on, so it's good. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, like I said, we always say this a million times over. There's a million little niches in real estate. You know, some people love office buildings. I would never buy an office building. I should never say never, but that's not my thing. But you know, I love this land thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's true.
It was fun to check Jason Hartman off the list. The guy, honestly, you kind of dominates the.
that mm-hmm. the world that we just talked about. So
it's fun to talk to him. If it were me, if it was just him, I would love to. We are going to meet up with him out there at some point. Yeah. I would love to talk to him because he and I grew up in the same neck right. of the woods. Clearly, right. when he talks about Huntington Beach, where I grew up in Garden Grove, it's like I went through. You know, I rode the bus down Beach Boulevard past where he lived. You know, to go to the beach. So
good. Maybe that's why he's got a skewed perception of stuff like you do.
It's the same Southern California thing. It's an Orange County thing, too. It's right. not even though he's in San Diego now, there's an Orange County kind of mindset. He's got the Disneyland mindset.
That's he doesn't quite have Disneyland inside of his head like you do, but
thank
yeah.
Thank you. That's it. So, I love it.
Thanks, Jill.
Thank you.
Have a good day. We didn't even name the show.
Yeah, I know.
We didn't even name it with him.
I didn't. I know. I was kind of trying to pick out. I was trying to pick out a funny phrase or something good, but I kind of got, he's got that, oh, wait a minute, this is going to be the title. He's got this deep, this soothing, calming voice that I was just kind of like getting lost in whatever he was saying. You know what I mean? I mean, I was listening and paying attention, but I was listening more to what he's talking about. So what's in his bio? Something funny that we can say? I don't know. More. How about 100 and... I don't know. We just added... How about something funny? Like, we just added 17 listeners to Jason Hartman's 18 million listeners or something. I don't know. That might be kind of funny.
How about something like... Pass on Wall Street. Sign up with the Land Academy.
I like that.
Or maybe, like, Pass on Wall Street. Because he's on pounding Wall Street. I agree with the whole mm-hmm. Wall Street thing I think if you're on the inside track, it's maybe the greatest money machine ever. You know mm-hmm. this from personal experience with your brother.
Yeah.
He does or did great. So, but I really think, I don't know, you know, we'll think of a title, I guess.
How about?
I'm trying to be so well behaved right now. I can't even, the stuff that I want to say.
Why?
Just because I have a lot to say.
Well, maybe we should turn this off.
I will.
You having a good day?
I'm having a great day.
I know you are. I'm just teasing you. I am totally teasing you. You're so laughing. It's really good. Do you know what? We can end with this. It's fun doing these interviews with so many different people still in our realm. And we all are successful in our own ways. We
that's
all
right.
have different takes on it. So that's
exactly right.
That's it. If anything, you know, our
thanks, Mom.
You're welcome. Our listeners.
Stephen, if you don't have anything nice to say
don't
turn
say.
Off the microphone.
That's right. We all come. We all live in this big, happy world, Stephen. We got to get along. Just kidding. I'm joking. But you know what I mean. All right. This has just been another great example of somebody else doing what we all do a different way.
That's right.
And I love it. And, you know, I appreciate, gosh, how he got to where he is. And boy, buying a house in Huntington Beach at the age of 20, that takes a lot. That's pretty cool.
Sure. So. I think you can stop right at it. I was a successful residential real estate agent. That's impressive in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. In Southern California with that mark. That's awesome. That's cool. We'll leave it at that.
We hold a drawing to win a free property every month. Enter to win by reviewing this show on iTunes and downloading our free ebook at landacademy.com.
If you want to get involved or you need more information about our profitable, niche real estate operation, call 480-467-0359. You just might get Jill at the other end of the line.
Landacademy.com. You are not alone in your real estate ambition.